Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. I know my voice is not usually dulcet. It's never dulcet, but I want you to understand that this morning, you're having to listen to my voice is more painful than my having to speak. I'm getting better. My throat doesn't hurt. My chest doesn't hurt. It's just you get this thing that it does to your voice, and I apologize. Wish it weren't this way, but there it is. And maybe it should just shut me in. Questions I need to answer. Is that okay? We got some important questions. So, I'm going to start with Dan. So, I'm looking at my tomatoes. They're in the window. They're in the sun, and I'm thinking, it's time. Dan says he got his tomatoes started a little late. And so he wants to speed them up. And so what Dan is going to do, you understand this because Dan subjects his tomatoes to this sort of black light. I understand that it's not black light exactly, but it looks like it. And so I also suggest that he play Jimi Hendrix. But right now, Dan says, I got just the thing to speed up my tomatoes. You know what that is, of course. It's Pink Floyd. So he's going to play Dark Side of the Moon. Well, okay, I understand this. And it works really well. And Dan, Pink Floyd is going to speed your tomato growth up enormously, but only under this condition. And if you do it this way, the Pink Floyd is going to work beautifully. What you want to do is take your speakers and put them in a window. Mm-hmm. Face them out of the window. Put the Pink Floyd on, and then put your tomatoes outside in the sunlight and get them out from that horrendous black light. Folks, let me tell you something about tomatoes right now. It's going to be warm. It's going to be sunny, and tomatoes love sunlight. You cannot produce better light than the sunlight that's going on right now outside your house. The temperatures are warming up. This next week is going to be very warm, at least until the end of the week. We're going to get some rain. Find a sunny place for your tomatoes. Put them outside. The air is going to be great for them. It's going to be great for them. Now, Dan, after having been under all that black light, which I know is not black light, but I just perceive it as black light. Under being under that black light for all of this time, they may have a little bit of problem with full sun exposure, so give them a half day today, and you'll be fine because that's all you got left is a half day today. Put them out there, let them get some sunlight. I think they're going to be just fine, and they will grow much faster. The wind, there's going to be a little bit of wind. It's out of the south, out of the southwest. It's going to be a mild wind, but just enough wind to strengthen those plants, to strengthen the stems, and just enough air circulation to stop damping off, which is a big problem for little seedlings. Folks, it's time to put your plants outside on the porch. Give them some air. Give them some sunlight. Don't put them on the north side of your house on a porch because they're not going to get any sunlight. Put them in some sun. Give them some sun. They'll really appreciate it. It'll make a difference. It'll make a difference. You know, hardening off is not, under these conditions, hardening off is not a big deal. And the reason is that the night temperatures are staying pretty high. But here's the other thing I do, Dan. So you play Pink Floyd until it drives your neighbors crazy, right? All day long. But there's a curfew at night when you can't play Pink Floyd. Bring your tomatoes in and play Pink Floyd for them inside. You see what I'm saying? Bring your tomatoes in at night. And you won't have to really worry about hardening them off. The sunlight's a little intense, but I think you're going to be fine. Just go ahead and put them outside. I think they're going to be great. I think they're going to love it, and they're going to say, "Man, I love Pink Floyd." That's what they're going to say. All right. Tony, you didn't do it, did you? You did it already? No, I see. Tony's got his plants outside. I thought you had cut your tulip popper down already. This is a different Tony on Fowl River. I'm sorry. Tony's got his too many Tonys, too many Johns, too many Jims. I get them. It's easy, you know. Sometimes you got to look carefully. Tony on Fowl River has got his plants out just like that. He's got them outside. Tony on Fowl River, do you have your speakers outside so that they can hear Pink Floyd? Because Dan says that's the thing. He says that's going to make all the difference, and I think that makes I think that works. I think that works. All right. So listen, this is an important message, not just to Dan, folks. If you're starting plants, go ahead and put them outside. You know, nasturtiums, for example, if you're starting nasturtiums, the temperatures outside are going to be perfect for nasturtiums, not only for starting the seeds, but for getting them growing. They're going to love the cool night temperatures because nasturtiums love cool night temperatures. As long as it's not below freezing, and it doesn't look like, unfortunately, it doesn't look like it's going to get below freezing anytime soon over most of the Mobile area, nasturtiums are going to love being outside. So a great day to start your nasturtiums. Go ahead and clip the seeds. Great temperatures. Keep the soil a little bit moist. Doesn't have to be super moist. Put them in bigger pots. Nasturtiums got big seeds. They like to be in bigger pots. Go ahead and push that seed in the ground a bit because they do tend to pop when they almost want to pop out of the ground when they germinate. So there you go. It's a great day for getting seeds motivated with Pink Floyd and sunlight. How does that work? David Hubble says his seedlings are doing well, needs to thin them out. That's really good. Tony has figured out a way to get Pink Floyd outside the house. So he's going to try that. If you need something alternative to Pink Floyd, you could do the Bach Goldberg variations. I think that might work too. It's very stimulating. It's good. It's good too. So I have a question here. Somebody working on an insectary border. and asking, are these good plants? Carpet, alyssum, thyme, Achilles, not Achilles, yarrow. Achilles, not quite the right, probably is a spell check problem. And marigolds. Well, yeah, here's the problem. If you're living in Boston, all of those are great plants for insects. Down here, they're not going to survive. So they're going to be terrible plants for insects. It was really funny the other day. I'm coming back to you. Hold on. Zappa, Dan. Oh, man. You know, Zappa is enough to beef heart. Okay, Dan, beef heart. Captain Beef Heart is the thing to do, not Zappa. Early beef heart. Trout mask replica, okay? So if you're working on an insectary border, a border for insects, it's a great thing. It's a great idea. It's a great concept. And one of the problems is that people talk about that as a great concept, but then they give you a plant list that's based on where their readers are, which is mostly in Boston, right? Or mostly in Indiana or mostly in California. And there was this incredible story on the news the other day. The Washington Post carried it. And it's this stupid thing. We don't know. Nobody knows where we are. And the Washington Post carried this story. If you want to protect bumblebees, here's a list of plants you can protect to protect bumblebees. And all the plants were plants that were native to the Californian floristic province, which and grow only there, and really don't even grow in gardens outside of that area. And so nobody could grow these plants. It was insane. And nobody realized that this was really a study only about California. Hey, we're going to come back with how to create an insectary garden, an insectary border, a border for insects that help your other plants when we come back.
I was raised in the country, that's a natural fact. Food on the table from the garden out back. Everyone working to make the land their own. Where the silver queen grows, running with your cousins from yard to yard. Living was easy, but the playing was hard. Didn't have much, nothing comes for free. All you needed was your family. I am a country girl. I've been around the world, and every place I've been ain't quite nothing like living in the South. Oh, wanna shut your mouth. I am a country girl.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Excuse me for chewing on my cough drop. You know, that's the temptation when you take cough drops is chewing on them. It's not going to change my voice. It's just the way it is. It will be okay, and there are better things to listen to, as we're discovering. The tomatoes will not be enhanced by the sound of my voice, but a couple of things will enhance your tomato growth this time of year. One is we decided sunlight is the first and most important thing, and so let's get them out in the sunlight. The second thing is good music, and that's going to be defined by the tomato grower itself. So we've had a little bit of a debate here. Billy Bob says he plays Metallica for his tomatoes, and gosh, I hope your tomatoes don't look like they've been listening to Metallica. But there it is. Dan, Beefheart is absolutely fine. You're going to end up with some funky tomatoes when they listen to Beefheart, but they'll probably be okay. It's just the trouble is you may be run out of the neighborhood, just like Billy Bob may be if you play it outside, so be careful. Particularly Troutmaster Replica. So there it is. I've heard a little bit from the Black. So the question is, what music would you play for your tomatoes to enhance their growth this time of year? In addition to the sunlight, which is number one, music does not work if there's not sunlight, okay? But with sunlight, I think the music can work. It can work very, very well. So something to think about that. We're going to do this in insectary border. Listen, the person who sent me the message on the insectary border, let me be clear. None of those plants, well, one of them may, but none of them are going to survive well in Mobile, and none of them are going to be particularly good. The challenge, of course, is me finding plants that are going to do well in Mobile, but you're going to be able to find easily at Walmart and Home Depot and Lowe's or in a seed packet. My wife was complaining the other day. She said, "Okay, I'm going to go online and I'm going to look for seeds to grow here in Alabama." Native plant seeds to grow in Alabama. And I said, well, good luck. Because there ain't a place to find native seeds and seeds native to Alabama. It's just we're kind of overlooked. And even though we're the center of diversity, really, for plants generally. Why is it? It's just the craziness of this world. But, you know, there are a lot of good plants. I think Cosmos will actually work pretty well. Cosmos, don't get the fluffy cosmoses. Make sure you get a cosmos with an open center. Okay? Marigolds could work well, but don't get a fluffy marigold. Get a marigold with an open center that has a little, that looks more like a sunflower, that looks like the original marigold, not these big fluffy marigolds that you can't see the center. Because it's those little flowers in the center that make all the difference. So cosmos and marigolds can work really well early in the year. as an insectary garden. The plant that attracts the most insects by far, it is absolutely stunning, and it is so much fun to watch. You will attract so many insects. You will be amazed. And they're all beneficial insects. They're all great insects for your garden. It's very selective that way. It's very interesting. It's our wild mints. And not the mint that they use for mint julep. That doesn't work very well here. But if you can find the old mountain mints growing along the roadsides here with their white frosty leaves, that is the best plant for attracting insects to your garden. The Mobile Botanical Gardens has been making some of those plants available. I keep encouraging them to try some of the native populations that I've collected that they could be growing, and maybe someday we will. Maybe someday we'll actually, you know, it's still a very open question as to whether we'll have a botanical gardens. The city has not responded so far, as far as I know. But if the garden survives, and if they take me up on the offer to grow some of these plants, we have some great plants that would be great for an insectary garden. So it's a funny thing, isn't it? We read about insectary gardens. They're great ideas. An insect garden that is good for the rest of your plants because it brings in the plants that are the insects that are beneficial. And the advice that they give is based on living in Boston or living in Minnesota or living in California, and it doesn't work for Alabama. That's one of the reasons I do this show. It's not because it makes me a millionaire. I do this show because, you know, I want you to be able to garden and to understand how important Alabama is to your gardening and how important it is to understand Alabama in order to garden. So there it is, a little more interesting. Give me some other questions about plants, and we'll try to find some other plants that you can use in your insectary garden. My wife says Tithonia, it's okay. It does attract insects, and much like a sunflower does. And pretty much at the right time, it's a good one. It's a big one. It's a big one. David Hubble would go for Pete Fountain. Of course he would. And Pete is great. I mean, it's just a great thing. I mean, I can imagine a tomato shaped by the music of Pete Fountain. It'd be a pretty sinuous, elegant thing, wouldn't it? Yeah, there it is. Good music for your tomatoes. That's one of the things we're talking about this morning. So, Charlie, have we got a caller? Do we have a caller?
Bill, we had a caller, but he just wanted to know if you know off the top of your head the hours for the botanical gardens.
No, I don't know what the hours are anymore because those hours have been restricted. I'll have to double check on that. And until we get some resolution with the city, I don't know what the hours are going to be, honestly. I can look it up, which I'll try to do here in the next break. Porterweed, Dan, is another suggestion for an insectary. That's pretty good. Somebody did somebody send me a message? I think I got a message asking about tulip poplars and why. So let me get into this thing. And I told Tony in Fairhope, he had a tulip poplar that he planted from a ceiling, and I had already kind of said not nice things about tulip poplars earlier in the show, at least where they occur around houses, never around a house. And Tony said, well, should I cut this down? I said, yes. And here's why. Tulip poplars do grow, and they grow pretty fast. They grow really fast, often, astonishingly fast, and they have no root system in this climate. They have the root system rots out, and so it became very popular because people got all their gardening advice from Minnesota and Mobile, as they always have. It's just hilarious. Oh, you can talk about your southern pride all you want, but you're getting your gardening advice from Minnesota. Tell me, explain that to me. Oh, Lordy. And so everybody in Minnesota is planting tulip poplars, and everybody in New England is planting tulip poplars. So that's what we're going to do. And everybody in Midtown planted tulip poplars. Virtually all of them are dead now. And all of them died spectacularly. That's the funny part. So there was a tulip poplar that fell from 1 yard and Charlie, just put, let me push this just a little bit. There was a tulip poplar that fell on Palmetto Street, and it fell from a yard on one side of the street. It fell all the way across the street and hit the porch on the house across the street. That was a big tulip poplar. And the TV lady came out and said, gosh, this storm was so bad, it fell this ancient tulip poplar. And I remembered when the tulip poplar was planted. And folks, I'm not that ancient. Gee, Willie. It was, the tulip poplar wasn't 25 years old. It's 20 years old. It's between 20 and 25 years old. It was ridiculous. And they grow very fast, they get very tall, and they have no root system, and they fall over. And you know what? Your house is there. And the rest of your garden is there, and your fence is there, and your car is there. It is worse than a water oak. And that's hard. It's hard to be worse than a water oak. And tulip poplar is. Get rid of them. And Bay Minette, God bless them. They're giving tulip poplars away for you to plant in your yard? Well, they'll all die spectacularly in the next hurricane. It'll be a lot of fun to watch. It's funny how that all works. So there it is. I just wanted to get that out. We're going to take a break. About time. And we're going to be back. Give us a call.
Down south, how the weather in the Delta, how the food tastes in your mouth. Butter beans and cornbread, grits and greens, candy yams and black eyed peas. If you're going to Mississippi, well, that Delta sky is sweet and clear. Ooh, y'all, I'm stuck here.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. We've been experimenting with music and tomatoes this morning and having a good time doing it. Maybe certain tomatoes respond to certain kind of music better than to other types of music. That's a possibility. David, to be clear... is not just Pete Fountain, but Louis Armstrong, Louis Prima, who did we play him on our show. Thanks to David, and a group called, Beausoleil, Cajun group. All of these things are right up David's alley, but David also sends us another song by a group called The Who. You may recognize. What's the song? Is Now I'm the Farmer, or I'm the Farmer Now, something like that? I vaguely remember this song, and it is a great song for our show. So David's gonna, I think, get another song on our show. I'm the Farmer Now, or something to that effect, from The Who. It's a cool song. There it is. So you can also let us know what you think your tomatoes' musical preferences are. We do know what the hours for the botanical gardens are right now. I am told that it's Wednesday through Sunday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. And callers out there right now, Wednesday through Sunday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Celeste, you've been very patient. Thank you. I'm listening. Tell me about the satsumas.
I have a satsuma tree. About 20 years old, and it is absolutely covered in black, and I don't know what it is. It does scrape off the leaves, but it does cause the leaves to curl up a little bit. And last year's Satsuma crop was absolutely disgusting. They were large, they were pithy, the skin was real misshapen. It was terrible.
So let's go back. Is there any chance that the Satsuma is under another tree?
No. It's right in the middle of the yard. It gets all day sunlight.
All day sunlight. Not another tree over it. So
nope.
So we know that the tree has some kind of problem. I haven't seen white flies as a problem in a while. But what the black sooty mold is telling me is that there was some kind of pest that was infesting the tree. It was an insect pest.
Okay.
And the black stuff is sooty mold. Not sooty mold, as some people like to say, but sooty mold, because it's sooty looking, like soot. And it's a mold, hold on, it's a mold that grows on insect poop.
Fabulous.
And I have to use words like that, because that's exactly
that's
what it is. And so we have to determine what the insect is that's infesting the tree, that's leaving the poop, that's allowing the mold to grow on it. Usually that means there's a white fly infestation. Did you notice when you went by the tree and brushed against the tree last summer or last fall that a bunch of little teeny tiny white flies flew up when you did it?
Not really.
Teeny tiny things. Yeah. So that makes it harder for me to figure out what it is. Did the tree put on a lot of new growth last year for any reason?
It did put on more growth than it typically does in a year. It usually only does maybe one branch or two, and I think this past season it put on 10 or 15 sprouts.
Yes.
More than it normally does.
So for whatever reason that happened, I think there are two things. You either had an aphid problem, which you're probably not going to have every year, or you had a white fly problem. The aphid problem would be the result of a lot of extra growth this year, which won't happen every year. But what you need to do is next year, and the sooty mold will wash off. It just comes off. It really does inhibit photosynthesis just a little bit, and that's not great. But as you see, it just comes off. It washes off. It will eventually wash off. But the big thing is next year to watch for the insects and see if there's a problem. So you're going to need to, about June or July of next year, of this year, excuse me, you need to call me back, and we need to walk around that tree and figure out what's living on that tree and see if there are any problems. And if there are, there's a lot of ease. There's easy solutions to both of those problems. Easy solutions. We just need to figure out which insect it is and what's causing the initial poop problem. And we'll have it solved. The pithiness could be the result of that. That's an interesting question. Was your fruit production less than normal?
Oh, yeah. Way.
Yeah.
Normally it's an orange tree come about October. The whole tree is just orange. It's that covered, and that's with us going through during the development phase and picking some off, trying to keep the branches from breaking. It's still
breaking,
usually solid
orange,
and this year it was more like polka dots.
That's right. So here's what happened. There's kind of a longer story here if you've got the patience for it. What happened was your tree went into alternate bearing because it had big crops before. It probably didn't have maybe you fertilized it a little bit, but there was probably frost damage, and it may have been in March when we got that crazy frost last year, and it killed the flowers. It killed most of the flower buds. So that meant that your tree didn't produce many oranges. And when that happens, when it doesn't produce as many Satsumas, a lot of the Satsumas are kind of funky. It's hard to explain why that happens, but when you get those poor crops like that, the fruits that are on there, a lot of them get puffy. They get a lot of rag on them. It can create a lot of problems. And that sometimes has to do with lack of foliage or other things. It could be exacerbated by the insect problem. But I don't think you're going to have that problem next year. So all of those things worked against you. The bad fruit year, everything worked against you. If we don't have these crazy late frosts next year, you should have a good complement of fruit in the coming year. You should thin the fruit down as much as possible so you don't stress the tree, just as you're doing. Put some cottonseed meal around the tree this year to make sure it's got enough. I would say put about 10 or 15 pounds of cottonseed meal around your tree out to the drip line just to make sure it's okay there. And call me back in June and let's try to figure out what this insect is.
You got it. It's a date.
All right, Celeste. Good to hear from you. Tony, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Bill. I sent you a picture of a camellia that's trying to come back. Did you get that picture?
Yeah, I'm just now looking for it. I'm looking. There it is. I see it. Ooh.
Okay. This was a very old camellia. I mean, this thing's probably 40 years old, and we had to dig it up to do an addition on our house.
And I
notice it's coming back from the roots that we left in the ground.
Yeah.
So what do I need to do to ensure that it comes back and, you know, and continues on?
Well, a couple of thoughts. One, you don't know that what's coming back from the roots is the same thing that you moved.
Okay.
Because many camellias are grafted. So it's like we go through with the satsumas, you know, you get
right.
it's welded onto another rootstock. So you don't know what you're going to get. It'll be interesting. It'll be fun to watch, but probably it's rootstock. It won't be the same camellia. It looks to me like this camellia is really struggling camellia scale, tea scale.
It does. Yeah, when you lift the leaves, they have the white powder under the leaves.
Yeah, so that's,
and I,
that's tea
scale. And I have been treating that with the oil.
So that's T scale. So control that, and then we'll see what happens with this camellia as it grows. I don't know when it'll flower. It could be many years. It may, if it's rootstock, sometimes they never flower.
Right.
We don't know what the flower is going to look like, but it'll be fun to watch.
Well, it has a ton of new growth on it right now. And also, how often should I be applying the horticultural oil to the bottom of the leaves?
We got to listen to this pretty cool song here, Tony. But as soon as I come back, I'll talk about the horticultural oil, okay?
Okay. Do you want me to hang on?
Yeah, you can if you like.
Okay. Yeah, I got another question.
All right.
Because everything is on the phone, you know you got to go. I'll get down on your bending knee.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Polkett, you've been out on that bike somewhere a long time. I hadn't heard from you in a while. Good to hear from you. A lot books aren't written for our area, and it's unfortunate. And I could write a lot of books, but they have to get published, and people would have to buy them. And I don't know of there aren't a lot of publishers who want to sell a dozen books along the Gulf Coast, which is typically what I would sell. But it's a little bit of a problem. This garden information. That's why we have this radio show. I try to do the best I can, giving you the right information and how to do it. A good question for next week, and let's talk about it, is how we collect great native plants for our gardens. And let's talk about that next week. Let's do this insect garden next week, and let's talk about where to find those plants and when to look for them. It's really, really a good idea. It's really a great thing. Tony, You wanted to ask about, you were going to ask about how to apply this horticultural oil. Is that right?
That's right. Yep.
So Tony's got some cool looking camellias. We don't know what's going to happen to them. We don't know what they're going to be, but they clearly have T-scale. T-scale is an increasing problem for camellias, but it's easy to resolve. Relatively easy to resolve, I should say, with a very simple product called horticultural oil, which is basically just a refined paraffin, if you will. There's other bases for making it, but just let's call it a refined paraffin wax that's liquid, and you spray it, and it coats the scale insects, and it just wipes them out. It's really very effective. The only trick to that, Tony, is very simple. You have to get it on the undersides of the leaves, so you need to make sure you have a good sprayer that can spray upwards.
Yep.
Right?
Got it. Yep.
So if you got that, you're fine. And then mix it up to package directions, and you should be fine. Now, if it's really thick, and this looks like a bad infestation, you're probably going to need to follow up in 10 days with a second spray. Okay?
Okay. That's what I wanted.
And then maybe... Yeah. And then maybe 20 days, and then probably wait 30 days, check again, see if you see some scale, hit it again.
Okay.
And you're not going to overuse this, really, but there's no need to keep spraying.
Okay.
But do it in those intervals, and I think you'll be all right.
Okay, well, that sounds good. Hey, Charlie's still hanging in there with us, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, he's in there. He's in there.
Well,
I wonder what song
he would want to play for the tulips.
For the tulips, so I don't know. Don't ask that. He'll play it if you ask that question. Charlie, you didn't hear that.
Nope.
All right, sir. Yeah. Thank you for the help there. Appreciate it.
All right, Tony. Thank you. Yeah. So we only get that once an hour. We've already had that this hour. We had it the first hour. So the ultimate questions remain, what music do we play for our tomatoes? And there are probably lots of different types of music that work. But the big thing you have to remember when you're selecting your music is it has to be played outside so that the tomatoes can get sunlight. There it is. Live music may be even better.
And your neighbors will love it.
Your neighbors will love it. If you play the guitar, they're not going to love it. They may not love it. Sorry if I have to say this out loud. They may not love it if you play Metallica. They may not love it.
Nine Inch Nails.
They may not love it if you play certain strains of Beefheart, though Dan and I would appreciate it. We would enjoy it. You know, it just depends on your neighbor. But it's fun to think about. It is fun to think about. No, we don't, that's Polecat. That's the name we're trying to keep out of this conversation. We're not going to use that name out loud. We got nothing to say about tulips or any of that kind of stuff. We're not going to use that name out loud, Polecat. Keep it to yourself. Cause if you say that word out loud, it sometimes magically appears, and we just don't want to have to hear it more than once in a show.
It's a tiny name.
Yeah. Let's don't do it. Mandolin orange. Now, there's a good one. Mandolin orange. Not mandarin orange, but mandolin orange is a great, great music for tomatoes. We play them on our show. They do some great stuff. That's a good name. The Black Crow's Garden Gate. You know, that's another one we should think about. Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. Look at that. Now, my dad would love that, wouldn't he? Whipped cream. I have not seen that album cover since I was 10 years old, Dan. Thank you for that, or not. So there it is. A lot of great suggestions for music. Ms. Kerchak has a message for me. I'm going to try to get to it, before the show is over. Let's see what she says. In our pollinator garden, there it is, pycnanthemum. Oh, it is. It is that nice little selection of albescens. That's perfect. Just saying. Spring plant sale in March. Good. This is from the official. This is the official word from Mobile Botanical Gardens. To get our insect garden growing, we have the most incredible plant to start with. The pycnanthemum, the white leaf mountain mint, whatever you want to call it, it's a great selection. Pycnanthemum albescens, it's going to be propagated. It's going to be ready for the spring plant sale in March. What a great way to start your pollinator garden with a great native plant, which was selected from the roadsides around Bay Minette. Great plant. Beautiful plant. No, it wasn't. This one wasn't. This one actually is from the Red Hills, but it's still a great plant. Still a beautiful plant. Great for attracting insects. A beautiful thing. I think that's the one they've got. We'll find out. But they're all great, the pycnanthemums. What a great way to start a collection. So, hey, this is where we got started. And it's coming up. Listen, I hope you start asking me questions next week. I'm going to introduce the idea this week. The question is, we're going to get your tomatoes growing. We're going to play the music. They're going to be in the sunlight. They're going to be happy. But now the question is, what are we going to do about planting them out? And when do we plant them out? It's trickier now. It's a harder question to answer. And I'm going to tell you right now, it's not only when do we plant them out? It's how do we plant them out? What preparations do we need to make now that climate is playing these funky games with us? And it is. It's playing weird games. Don't know whose fault it is. But the climate's playing weird games with us, and we got to be prepared to deal with it. So we're going to do that. I got a caller from Theodore. I wish I could get to it. We're going to run out of time today, but hold your questions till next week. Give me a chance next week. Let's do it. Next week, we're going to talk more about this pollinator garden. We're going to talk about how to collect native plants next week. That's going to be a lot of fun. We'll talk a little bit more about soil and a little bit more about the climate and how we're going to adapt to it as we get ready to put our tomatoes out. Hold on. See you then.
My girl, don't lie to me. Tell me.